Hey everybody, if it's Wednesday, it must be Wednesdays with Dave. So welcome to the call today. If you're new to the call and you want to ask a question for the next hour, we'll take any and all questions regarding real estate. If you want to get in the queue, what you do is you press star zero. The operator will be on the line. She'll take your name and she'll introduce you to the call. So you can press star zero right now and get in that queue so you don't get boxed out. And then in the meantime, I'm going to tell you what happened over the last weekend. We had this really good event that we call the Secret Underground 3 over in Boston. We had hundreds of people in the room. We had special speakers. A guy that started ESPN was there, Bill Rasmussen. We had basically the whole idea behind the Secret Underground is they're students that have gone through the events, so we're going through the courses. And then they've gone out and they've killed it in some special niche. So all the students told their stories, told their secrets, and they all competed against each other at, you know, who is doing better and who had a better niche, and it was a really fun time. Plus, it was in Boston, so it was really good, too, right in my backyard. So that being said, it's a beautiful day up here in New England. Only two more weeks of summer left. I hope you're out there doing something fun, but I'm gonna ask, who's the operator on the call right now today?
Hi, this is Ariel.
Hey, Ariel. Oh, hold on a second. Just realized my phone is in a different mode. Okay, there we go. I'm sure people can hear you better now. All right, so do we have a caller online?
At the moment, we have no callers in the queue.
All right, so what you want to do is press star zero. I know it's the summertime. As a matter of fact, we had a coaching call yesterday, and it was probably the least amount of questions I've ever gotten on a coaching call, and that is because it is the summer. People are on vacation. They're out there having fun and they're having a good time. In terms of what's going on in the marketplace, well, flipping properties are going well. You know, we're doing anywhere between two and three a month. Our main focus is commercial. Multi-families, we're buying and selling. We just did a couple office deals. Office is a really hot market right now. But in terms of the single-family market, it's really a real estate broker market and it's a direct mail market. If you've got direct mail going on a regular basis, you're getting deals. If you've aligned yourself with a broker and you found some commonality with that broker, then you're getting deals. Here's a great thing to do. I call it take a broker to lunch. And if you want to get a deal within the next 3 months, okay, for the next 6 weeks, take a different broker to lunch and you pay at a restaurant and then follow up with them, and I guarantee you you'll have at least one deal over the next 3 months. Everybody that has done this has gotten more than one deal, but that's why I can guarantee you one. But it just simply works because you're getting face time in front of the brokers, you're getting to know them, you're building rapport, you're finding commonality, and if you're following up, well, eventually you're going to get a deal. So that being said, do we have someone in the queue?
Yes, and our first call comes from Rashid. Rashid, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Good morning. Good morning, all. Thanks for this Q&A.
Hey.
I just wanted to find out where I can get proof of funds letters on the website.
Oh, Jeff knows that. Email Jeff at jeff@rementor.com.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Jeff@rementor.com.
rementor.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So what's going on in your business?
Yeah, I'm just starting out. Just got your package, so I'm fully charged to get on. So hope to give you some good success stories soon.
Well, do you plan on doing a direct mail campaign?
I've not gotten to that yet.
Yeah, well, go through the part about direct mail and organize a direct mail campaign. Get yourself out a calendar. You know, determine which dates you're going to send out which letters. And do it. Get good lists, get either the foreclosure list, the notice of default list. But you may geo-target a particular area and target a zip code, you know, of bedroom communities, one, two and three bedroom starter homes. But those direct mail campaigns, if you do it on a regular basis, they're really, really good, and they'll bring you business.
Thanks a lot for all you are doing, Dave. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Now go out there and get some deals.
Thank you very much. Will do.
All right. Take care. All right. Who's the next caller?
Hey, at the moment, we have no more callers in the queue.
All right. It's definitely just the summertime. So here's the thing. So there's probably, I don't know how many people are in line on this call. I can't tell, but I can tell you this. If you are on this call, you should take advantage of the fact that you have me for the next hour and use this as a personal coaching call. So if you've got challenges in your business, whatever you got going on, get on the line and let me know. And then we can spend some time together because it looks like it's a very thin call today, which is a good thing. And if nobody gets on the line, then I will make it an early call. But as people now start to dial, I can tell you what I'm going through. I re-ruptured a disc that I had herniated last November. I had finally gotten it repaired probably in July. And I re-ruptured it jumping off a bridge, being in a boat in a storm, and then doing a 9-mile run. So I'm in the process of doing a lot of physical therapy. I'm in the process of, I didn't have a lot of sleep the last 3 weeks, but I just finally spoke with my doctor, got some new meds, and I got some good sleep last night. I discovered this new thing called, it's not new in the world, it's old actually, called Qigong. It's the Chinese exercises that actually moves the energy around in your body. I tell you what, I've been doing it for 3 days. I do it in the morning, I do it at night, and every time I get done with a session, I bought a couple of videos on it, every time I get done with a session, oh my gosh, I feel so clear in my thinking. My body feels good. I feel like I've just got a ball of energy, not bursting to get out, just some good, solid energy. I've got good focus for either the day or the nighttime session actually takes away all of the bad energy of the day, gets rid of that, and keeps you clear for your night's sleep. It's really good. If you have never tried it, you can Google Qigong. It's Qigong. And I actually got a really good series from this company called MindValley.com. MindValley.com. So you might check it out. It's good. All right. Who's the next caller?
Okay, our next call comes from Ted. Ted, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having this call.
Hey, Ted.
Hi. So for multifamily, do you have any comments on low-income housing tax credit properties?
Yeah, funny you mentioned that. That came up on the coaching call yesterday. So here's the deal with the tax credits. So what are you looking at? Are you looking at a deal with tax credits or...
Yeah, I'm thinking of pursuing those properties... for direct mail.
Where would you get that list?
I think on the HUD website they have some lists of properties, and I'd have to go research them to find owners.
Okay, so here's the deal with tax credits. So everybody that's not familiar with it knows. A city or a municipality will offer tax credits to developers to build multifamily properties for low-income people, and they have to rent to low-income for usually 15 years. And in return, they get these tax credits, which means they don't have to pay taxes for 1, 3, 5 years, and it's, you know, whatever the taxes would have been for that period of time. So what people do is, what the developers do is they take those tax credits and they actually sell them to large corporations or wealthy individuals from anywhere from 50 to 85 cents on the dollar. So they get, it's actually a way that you could do a no-money-down deal because you're getting the money from the tax credits. So what we do as multifamily investors is we look for properties that have tax credits but are in year 13 or 14 of that 15-year period, so that we know that the tax credits are going to be burning off in a year or two. We're going to buy the – and remember, it's low-income housing, so you get the developers are required to not exceed certain rents. So rents are usually below market. So what we do is we buy them based on actual numbers, which we buy all our properties, you know, on the low rent. And then when year 15 comes, we change it over to a market rent property, we raised the rents, and now we've got this big boost in revenues and in value of the property. So that's the deal with the tax credits. Yeah, if you can get a list of tax credit properties, you know, and then determine which ones are in year 13, 14, that would be a great list to mail out to.
Okay. I know some of them have 15-year extensions, so that's something that we need to find out.
Yeah, I think that's something that the developer would add on to it, but for additional tax credits. So I've never actually heard – I don't know of a developer that's actually taken that. They usually want to cash out or cashed out by that point. But it's possible.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, good luck out there.
Yeah.
All right, who would be next on the Wise Cracker line?
Okay, at the moment we have no more callers in the queue.
All right. Well, let's see. We could talk about, let's talk about some single family, because you guys are in from the single family side, most of you. We can talk about a deal that we just did. Oh, all right, here's the deal. So I'm partnered. One of my corporations is partnered with another person, not a student, but just somebody in this area who everybody knows I invest in this area, and people will come to me with different deals at different times and say there's a great deal. So I got this deal about two towns over, and we've had it on the market now for about 2 months. And I walked through the property. One of the things on being so busy and having a lot of things going on is sometimes some things fall through the cracks. I'm just like everybody else. So I went and I walked this property the other day to try to figure out why it wasn't selling. And when I did, you know, I got there. The landscaping looked like crap. They hadn't spent originally he had spent time in the landscaping, but since the 2 months had gone by, nothing had been done, and it showed. So, you know, just to get the person out of the car, it was not good. Secondly, there was a tree on the side of the property that was leaning against, kind of leaning against the house, not completely leaning, but leaning against the house, that needed to be cut down, and that would also show the property better. There were shutters missing from the front, which he, on the list of things to do when I originally walked it, that was supposed to have been done, didn't get done. And the yard itself is probably an acre parcel, and three-quarters of the acre is, well, half of the acre is kind of like a wooded area. Another half is like overgrown brush, and then the other quarter is where the house, the driveway sits, is the front of the property. So, I mean, if you get an acre property, you want to cut and expose as much of that as possible, most of that brush out of there. So we've got a landscaper, my own personal landscaper, actually, because it's next town over from where I live. I got him over there to clear that brush out immediately. And then I walked through the property, and there was a couple of carpets that he told me he could save. And as I walked through and looked at those carpets he told me he could save, you couldn't save those carpets. He told me you got the stains out and it looked pretty good. Stains didn't get out. I mean, you can be cheap, do something, but you can be cheap and not sell a property, and you never see your profit. Carpets are a judgment call, but if you're trying to sell a property, you take the carpets out, you put the new ones in. You make sure that the entire house is coordinated in the painting. You know, so you have a two-tone paint, you have the natural paint on the inside. I like to use Benjamin Moore Navajo White for the walls on an eggshell type of a finish, and I like to use semi-gloss white for the ceiling and semi-gloss for the trim and Benjamin Moore for the ceiling paint. And then that just makes the properties pop. If you've got borders, wallpaper borders, or even wallpaper in that property, get it out of there. You know, somebody liked that wallpaper, but, you know, everybody's tastes are different. You got to get wallpaper out, number one. Number two, wallpaper usually makes a room look smaller because there's so many details, you know, and designs on that wallpaper that it closes in the room. You put a nice Navajo white paint, which is an off-white paint on the wall with a nice semi-gloss, it's going to brighten that room out. And if you've got hardwood floors, hey, people ask me all the time, you know, if we've got carpet and there's hardwood floors below, should we keep the carpeting if the carpeting's really nice, or should we take up the hardwood and refinish? My answer is always refinish the hardwood, because there is a certain percentage of the population that are actually allergic to carpet. You know, so if somebody buys a property and someone's looking at a property and it has carpet in it, they're thinking, oh, I'm going to have to take this carpet out and I'm going to spend some money on these hardwood floors. But if you do all the hardwoods, somebody walking in, number one, hardwoods look beautiful. So somebody walking in would look at the hardwood floor and say, "Ooh, nice!" You know, and you got the nice Navajo paint, you got the trim, you got the Benjamin Moore ceiling paint on there, and everything just pops out so nice. And then if they want to put down some throw rugs, if they want to put some carpet, they put some carpet down. Now, one of the options I might do for a newer house, if it's all hardwood floors, is I might give an allowance for carpet for the bedrooms. Because it's always nice when you have, you know, you're getting out of bed in the morning and you have a nice carpet that you put your feet down on. Even though if there's hardwood below carpet in the bedrooms, I will take that bedroom carpet out and I will make it hardwood for that small percentage of people that are allergic. It just opens up your buying pool. So now, here's the thing. This is a big colonial house, probably about, I can't remember the exact number of rooms, so probably about 10 rooms. It has 5 bedrooms, believe it or not, a huge house. But only one bathroom. The bathroom's on the first floor. Oh, no, actually, there's 2 bathrooms. There's one off the master bedroom as well, and that has some issues, too. So there's a master bath down on the first floor, and that's the one where everybody else in all the other bedrooms would have to go to take a shower. Or if they have to pee in the middle of the night, that's where they're going to have to go pee. And that's not a good thing because it's down on the first floor. So if you get a house that has 5 bedrooms, the first thing you think about is, all right, which one of these bedrooms is going to make the best bathroom? So, of course, you want to choose the smaller of the bedrooms if you can, because it's always going to depend on where the plumbing is going in the house. You know, what side is the plumbing on, and can you run that plumbing over to the room that you want to make the bathroom? So usually, you know, you're going to choose a room that's above the existing bathroom down on the first floor. Well, in this particular house, the room above the first floor bathroom, the bathroom's off the kitchen. By the way, if you have a choice on where to put a bathroom, you never put it off the kitchen for obvious reasons. So that's a situation in itself. But the kitchen is so big that we could actually extend the wall out and make a hallway from the hall coming downstairs, which we did, going into the bathroom, and then a hallway from the kitchen going into the hallway, going into the bathroom. So it keeps any unseemly odors away from the kitchen. So this particular master bedroom, the bathroom's upstairs above it, so we don't have that choice. Now we have to choose another room, and we've got 2 choices. We've got a smaller bedroom. Well, actually, the smaller of the bedrooms is on the opposite side of the house of where the plumbing is. So we're actually going to put the bathroom in the next bigger room, which is actually adjacent to the master bedroom. So we're going to add a bathroom there. Those typically cost about $10,000 to install, depending upon everything that you're doing. When you're starting from scratch like this, it's going to go between $10,000 and $15,000 because you're going to need everything new plus the plumbing as well. And if you got the opportunity to put in a new bathroom, you know, you just make that thing look so good. You put in, if you can, you put in tile floors. It all depends on the neighborhood as well. You never over rehab a property from the neighborhood. It doesn't matter what your tastes are. Okay, you take a look at the neighborhood, and whatever the neighborhood is, that is the standard of your rehab. Everything's going to shine. Everything's going to look great. But the quality of the materials that you're going to use is going to depend on the quality of the neighborhood that you're in. So, you want to put down tile. In this particular bathroom, we can put a double sink down there. We can put a shower in. And, of course, we're going to put one of those showers in that it's a stand-up shower where you have the see-through glass, but that's in right now. We're going to put a jacuzzi tub in there as well. It's big enough for that. So you can have all the extras. And actually, in this particular one, I don't know if you've ever been in one of those fine hotels where they have the bathroom, you know, and the bathroom's so big that they actually have the toilets in a closet, and it's got a door where you can open and close. So 2 people can be in the bathroom and somebody can be in the toilet, and they just close the door for privacy. So that's what we're going to do on this. And we're going to put a small area for the toilet to be. So multiple, hey, look, a 5-bedroom house, how many people are going to be trying to use that bathroom at the same time? You know what I mean? So that would be a nice amenity for that as well. So as I'm thinking about this house, a couple other things. Apparently, something happened when there was a leak in the ceiling, and it happened after the initial rehab was done. My partner hadn't gone through it. Apparently, maybe he has gone through it, but that showed. And whenever you have a stain in the ceiling, I mean, that is a deal killer immediately, or it certainly is an offer killer, because nobody's going to want to put an offer in a house where there's a stain in the ceiling. You didn't know what the hell's going on. What the heck's going on up there? So there's additional ceiling paint that needs to be done, and the property is not staged. It was supposed to have been staged. If you want to sell a house quickly, you know, you find a staging company. There's a staging company that will charge you $2,000 a month. I mean, $2,000, and then you have like three months, and then they charge you a little bit more as the months go by. And typically, if you stage it properly, you should be selling that property within the two or three months. So that's another problem with this property. And I think those are the major things. So to give you an idea of one of the things that I happen to see in my own deals, you know, that needs to be changed immediately, that's it. So if you want to talk about rehabbing, I've rehabbed over 700 smaller properties. I've rehabbed over 4,200 multifamily units. I have got my fingers deeply rooted in rehabbing. So I'll be happy to answer any of those questions as well. So who would be next to ask a question?
Okay, our next call comes from Jeffrey. Jeffrey, please go ahead.
Hello. I have a question about raising money for syndication for distressed multifamilies and rehabbing them.
Right.
I found that the biggest problem I'm having is I'm just starting out in this, and I have no track record, and that's the main objection that all of the private financiers have, is they don't want to talk to me if I can't show them a strong track record of finishing projects. So how would I overcome that?
Okay, so first of all, where are you going to find your private money?
I'm going through networking with wealthy individuals. I know a few, and I talk to them and ask for referrals. And whenever I talk to wealthy individuals who have an affinity for this type of investment, they always ask for my track record, and I don't have one.
All right, so there's a couple of things. Number one, you could partner with a sponsor, okay, and you'd find your sponsors through actually the people you're meeting to put on your list, okay? Number two, there are people out there that will sponsor your deal based on the amount of education that you've gotten. So if you've gotten a good amount of education, you can show it, and you show that you know what you're talking about. There are people that will back you up. And how do I know this? Because I was one of those people that didn't have any experience and needed money at the beginning. And we've got students that are doing this on a regular basis. But you get to present yourself properly. You know, you've got to explain what you buy, why you buy it, where you buy it, all the different reasons for it. You just got to be very thorough in everything that you say, everything that you do when you're talking with somebody that's going to back you without you having experience. And all it takes is one deal to get that experience. So I can tell you this. There's two things. Number one, get a sponsor. And number two, if you're just talking to you got to get out and you got to be going to more meetings. You got to be telling people what you're doing. You can go on meetup.com and you can find a bunch of different meetings there. I got one of my coaching students is going to six different meetups a week, different types of meetups, just to meet people to talk about real estate. You know, when he's building his he's getting his commitments for private money. That way, so that's one thing you can do. But it's really a numbers game. You just got to get in front of a lot more people. Make sense?
All right. Yeah, makes
sense. Oh, the other thing you can do is you can partner with somebody on a deal that has a track record, you know, and then you do that deal, and then after that you can go on your own, and now you've got your track record as well.
Okay. Someone else mentioned that maybe I could make like a pitch book. And in that pitch book where I describe my business model and my management team, I could retain some people on an advisory board that have experience and substitute their credentials for mine.
Well, I mean, absolutely. You should definitely have a pitch book, number one. And number two, you should be explaining who your team is, because everybody knows that you don't do real estate by yourself. You surround yourself with a team. You know, your accountants, your lawyer, your advisors, as you say. Your advisors are the people you're getting your education from. I mean, you can mention the education that you're getting from us and that we're your advisors. We don't have a problem with that. You just can't say that we're your partners, because we've had people do that in the past, and you just can't do that. But you can say that, you know, you're advised by. I mean, we've been teaching now for 12 years. I own over 7,000 units, and you know, you can use those to your advantage. It'd be better if you're going to write something like that to send it over to the office so we can okay it. But we'd be happy to write something up for you that you can add into your pitch book.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, this is the thing you got to realize. It is a numbers game, okay? And you also got to realize that most people are just like you. When they started out, they didn't have a deal. They didn't have any money, okay? And they had to find somebody that would still back them because of it. And they found that person. So they're out there.
Okay, great.
All right?
Thank you.
All right. Good luck. All right. Who's next?
Hey, at the moment, we have no more callers in the queue.
All right, then. You know what I think I'll talk to you guys about is about contractors. Okay, why do you think they call them contractors? Because they're cons. They're very difficult to deal with. I was a contractor, but I wasn't a con. I was a contractor for a good 8 years. You know, my story is I was in the real estate. I was in a rock and roll band. I started landscaping. I started doing contracting. And then I started doing real estate. So the one thing I knew as a contractor was the fact that, you know, you're doing multiple things at the same time. You've got multiple jobs going on. And a lot of contractors, they don't run their business properly, and a lot of them don't. What they're doing is they need to get money by Friday to pay their people. So they want money from you, and they want like half up front, and, you know, all these crazy demands. So you got to be really, really careful on who you're using for your contractors. And you should have a contract. Okay, even though I was a contractor and I had I was having people sign my contract, I didn't realize until I started, you know, buying so many properties and rehabbing so many properties and using, you know, at one time my construction company was 18 people with 35 to 40 different subcontractors. And I had all these different people doing work for me. I didn't realize how specific I needed to be in my contract because a contract of people doing work for me. Because what would happen is I do a contract, I have a guy on a job, and he'd screw me somehow, okay? So I'd be like, oh, what the heck? You know, this guy, you know, just screw me, disappear on the job, or, you know, he took the advance and he put in the material they said he was going to do, or he subcontracted that job out, he said he was going to do it himself. You know, all these different things. So each time I got screwed, okay, I would put something in my contract so I couldn't get screwed the same way again. You know, being a legitimate ethical contractor, I had never thought of doing the things that were being done to me. So I had this contract. First, I had my original contract that I had other people sign. But then I started adding these things in and adding all these different clauses in there so that when people signed my contract, you know, one of my students described my contract as when somebody signs this, it's like controlling the dog on a leash because I have so many different clauses in there. So let's go through a couple of these different things. First of all, you always want to have a paragraph in there that states that your contractor is going to clean up at the end of the day. All right, because they don't clean up at the end of the day, and your property, you know, turns into a big trash thing. And, you know, before you know it, there's stuff everywhere, and every time I buy a property, it's for sale immediately. You know, I know that the majority of the people can't see through, you know, what's going on in the rehab, but all I need is one that can, and I can get that property under agreement, and I can have that property sold as soon as it's done, and that, you know, every day that you hold the property, it's going to cost you more money. It's your daily carrying cost, and you should be figuring that out. We've got what we call the offer calculation worksheet for rehabs, and it goes through all the different costs for pre-closing, closing, and after closing, and then it calculates your daily carrying cost. So you know that every day you own that property is costing you X amount of dollars. So every day you save and you sell that property sooner, you're saving X amount of dollars. So that's why you want that property clean, and I'll charge them a penalty. You know, I'll kick a contractor off a job for not keeping it clean. That will be the reason that they're off that job. So that's number one. Number two, you should have a time penalty clause that they agree to have that contract done in a certain amount of time. Because a lot of times different contractors are working off each other. And one has to get one job done and another one has to before another one can start his job. So if somebody doesn't show up on site, which they don't, they have a habit of not showing up when they're supposed to, somebody doesn't show up and they don't get it done, it screws everybody else up in the back, screws everybody else's scheduling up. So we have a penalty clause.
in that penalty clause is what I'll say to a contractor is, and I kind of, I back into this. I'll say to the contractor, let's say to a roofing contractor, I'll say, Mr. Contractor, how many days do you think it's going to take to do this roof? And they always give you like a short number of days. You know, he'll say, oh, you know, I'll be in and out of this job in 7 days. I'll say, okay, Mr. Contractor, not including any weather days, you know, just say if for some reason, you know, things didn't go right, this job was taking you longer, what's the longest amount of time that it would take you to do this job? And then they come up with a different day. They go, oh, you know, probably the latest is going to be 10 days. And then I'll say, and if that's agreeable to you, which most of the time it is, they're not going to give you any crazy number. And I'll say, well, Mr. Contractor, then you won't have any problem signing, okaying this addendum that says that, you know, for every day after 10 days, you're going to be charged an additional $50 for not completing the job. Oh, my gosh, one of two things is going to happen. If they're an ethical contractor, they're going to look at you and say, yeah, no problem, I'll sign it, I'll initial that part of the contract. Or if they're an unethical contractor that has a lot of jobs going on and they just wanted your contract and they're going to put you on the back burner, they'll say, oh, well, wait, and they'll start making excuses. So you'll know right then and there who you're dealing with. The other thing is I always get to ask, well, how much are you going to charge, you know, on that fee? Is it $50? Is it $100? It all really depends on the size of the contract. If it's, you know, if it's $10,000 or more, I'm going to charge them $100 a day. If it's less than $10,000, it's usually $50 a day. If it's a $500 to $1,000 contract, maybe it's $25 a day. It's less than $25, though. So that's the penalty clause. Now, you might be thinking, well, what if they get done early and they ask you for a early bonus, right? So what I'll say to them is the early bonus is that you're going to get another job from me. Because you did it not only on time but beforehand, and I got that from when I was a contractor. I ended up becoming one of the leading contractors in New England for Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae for their foreclosed properties back in the early '90s, a long time ago. Different life for me. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac used to have the exact same penalty clause in their contract. That's where I got it from because it's such a good contract. So I would say to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, the reason I became their lead contractor is I always got my job done on time, and I never asked them for overage unless it was something that it was just unforeseen by anybody. We'll talk about overages next. I would say to them, you know, they would say to me, this is your penalty clause, and I would say to them, well, you know, what's it going to be when I get it done on time? And they would say the exact same thing. We're going to give you another job. Like, okay, great, thanks. So let's talk about overages. So contractors love to give you a low-ball offer, you know. By the way, the person that gives you the lowest price is not necessarily the best choice when you're choosing your contractor. A lot of guys low-ball their price and then come in and try to hit you with a bunch of overages, making their money later on the job. So you got to make sure that they're not going to try to, you know, hit you with overages. And when you're comparing the contracts or when you're comparing the three different bids that you should be getting, take a look at the contractor. Make sure that this guy can actually do this job. Sometimes they bid it so much that they're not going to make a profit. And they get halfway through the job and they realize, holy crap, I'm going to make a profit on this job. And they either try to hit you with an overage when you say, hey, you know, this is the contract, and then they walk off the job and they leave. And now you're stuck with a job half done. And it's even worse if they pull the permit because nobody likes to come in behind somebody else's permit. So overages. You should have a clause in your contract that basically says that you do not allow any overages unless it's okayed by you in the contract, that you have a signed overage agreement. And that's another part of your contract, another addendum in your contract, an overage agreement. So nothing gets done unless it's signed by you, because another thing they like to do is they like to do the extra work and then come bill you for it later, okay? And then they give you this big guilt trip of threatening they're going to take you to court if you don't pay for work that you never contracted them to do in the first place. Okay, so you make sure that they initial that overage clause and that you have to okay it. Now, I tell them, I say, Mr. Contractor, take a look at this job. What could possibly go wrong here that you do not foresee? Now, for instance, if somebody is taking down walls, sometimes you don't know what's inside of those walls. You know, up here in New England where I live, they built some of these houses in the 1700s, and everything is not 16 foot on center inside those walls, those studs, all right? Some of them are 24 feet on center, and not only that, it's the same stud going from the first floor to the second floor. Imagine how fast, you know, that property is going to go up on fire if the fire happens in the house. So a lot of times you don't know what's inside of a wall. On a roof, for example, if the roof is kind of warped a little bit, that usually means that there's a problem with the sheathing below. So the contractor might look at the roof and say, hey, you know, the roof is just, it's moving a little bit. So there could be some rotted sheathing there. That might be some extra. And then I'll say, okay, how much are you going to charge me per linear foot for that sheathing? Or how much are you going to charge me per sheet for the sheathing? Because you want to get your prices for the potential overages now before they start, instead of after they start and they're already in the job. Once they're already in the job, they got you. You know, you're not going to go to somebody. You're not going to bid this overage out. That contractor is going to have to do it. So that's the deal on the overages. Let's talk about the permits. Always have your contractor pull the permit. Why do we have our contractor pull the permit? Because it makes them liable, number one, for anything that might happen to the property or go wrong with the property or with that job for their specific task that they pull the permit for. And number two, those permits cost money. Sometimes those contractors don't add that to the bid, so you get a little extra coming out of it as well. So what else do I have in my contract? I certainly have a draw schedule. We've got it, and my draw schedule is not 50-50. Any contractor that wants 50% from you up front is a contractor that probably has to pay some bills for money that's taken from you, not bills that's going to go to your property. So what I do is 10% of the front materials, 30% of the first draw, if a certain fees are done. The different inspections. So I'll do 30% for the next draw, 30% for the next draw, then 30% for the last draw. By the time the last draw is done, you know, you're far ahead of that contractor, and that contractor is done. And what do I mean by being ahead of the contractor? You never want to be in a position where the contractor is ahead of you on money, where you've given him more money than he's actually done on the job. You can be even with him, but never let him be ahead of you. Because once he's ahead of you, okay, he may go out and spend that money on something else. He may be doing other jobs. And if he walks off that job, he has no incentive for coming back on because he's already ahead. So you want to make sure that contractor is always behind on you so that the work he's doing is the work that he's about to get paid for, not that he's already been paid for. That's really, really important. Another thing is draw schedules and draw releases, okay? What do they call them? Mechanic lien releases. Every time you do a draw, you make sure you get a mechanic's lien release because even if you don't owe them money or that contractor walks off your job, okay, or you fire a contractor from your job, which you should have the right to do at any time. If you ever fire a contractor from your job, there's a potential that he's going to come back at you with a mechanic's lien saying that you didn't pay him in full.